Felicity Morrow returns to the prestigious Dalloway School with a heavy burden. After her girlfriend Alex's death the previous year, she's determined to finish her senior year in the same crooked stone building where tragedy struck. Godwin House rises from the Catskill foothills like a Gothic specter, its weathered facade bearing witness to generations of literary students. Despite her mother's suggestion to transfer elsewhere, Felicity feels drawn to these haunted halls. At least here, she thinks, running fingers along the worn banister, the walls know me. The house feels eerily empty compared to last year's energy and laughter. When Felicity discovers someone new occupying Alex's old room, the boundaries between past and present begin to blur. The mysterious new student leaves dirty coffee cups in the kitchen and reads on the porch in a seersucker suit, smoking cigarettes with detached sophistication. Their first encounter ends with a slammed door, setting the tone for a relationship that will prove both intoxicating and deadly. The creak of floorboards and whisper of wind through ancient eaves seem to carry echoes of the past. Is Godwin House truly haunted, or are the ghosts merely in Felicity's mind? As September fades into autumn, the line between reality and imagination grows increasingly thin in this isolated corner of campus. The girl in Alex's room isn't a ghost, but disrupts Felicity's carefully constructed world nonetheless. She introduces herself simply as Ellis, the ambiguity becoming characteristic of everything about her. Hannah reveals Ellis Haley is a 17-year-old Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist who transferred to Dalloway to write about the Dalloway Five, specifically Marjorie Lamont. She's exploring whether witchcraft merely reflected a pathologization of female anger, creating an immediate connection with Felicity, who researched the same topic before Alex's death. Ellis quickly becomes Godwin House's center of gravity. Her charisma draws everyone in, placing her atop the social hierarchy. She makes each girl feel special while maintaining her mystery. This calculated charm, combined with her literary fame, makes her both irresistible and dangerous to someone as vulnerable as Felicity. What draws us to enigmatic people like Ellis? Perhaps it's the challenge they present, a puzzle we desperately want to solve, even when the completed picture might reveal something we'd rather not see. The Dalloway Five were students executed in 1714 for allegedly practicing witchcraft and murdering classmate Flora Greyfriar. Accounts conflict between ritual sacrifice and hunting accident, yet all five died mysteriously, as if supernaturally avenged. This history becomes central to both Felicity's thesis and Ellis's novel. Felicity studies the library's occult collection, examining trial records for details about the spells and Flora's death. Marjorie Lamont's confession particularly stands out, claiming she killed Flora as a devil's sacrifice after being possessed. Ellis suggests forming their own coven to authentically recreate the Dalloway Five's experiences. If I'm to do this properly, like a real method writer, I should explore the same pastimes the five explored, she insists. When Felicity warns that magic is dangerous, Ellis dismisses her with, "Magic isn't real," seeing their activities as research material. Their fundamental disagreement, whether supernatural forces exist or human psychology creates its own monsters, becomes central to their relationship and the novel's exploration of truth. What happens when we can't trust our own minds? Throughout the story, Felicity's recollection of Alex's death transforms dramatically. What she believed was a mountain climbing accident reveals itself as a fabrication, a protective shield her mind created to escape unbearable guilt. After an emotional breakdown, Ellis confronts her with reality. Alex drowned at school. The climbing story was merely an exercise Dr. Ortega had Felicity write as an alternate version. The truth was messier. Alex had a violent temper, and her death resulted from a drunken accident following an argument. This revelation forces Felicity to question her entire past. When strange events occur, missing postcards, misplaced books, ghostly sensations, Felicity cannot determine whether these are supernatural occurrences, deliberate manipulations, or manifestations of her unstable psyche. Memory isn't a perfect recording, but a story we tell ourselves, and sometimes the most convincing lies are the ones we believe. The night migrations, ritualistic outings organized by Ellis, become increasingly central to the story. These nocturnal adventures blend occult practices, literary research, and psychological manipulation into experiences that blur reality and performance. For Ellis, they represent method writing, while for Felicity, they reawaken her interest in witchcraft and memories of rituals with Alex. During one significant migration, Felicity leads the Godwin House girls to an abandoned church for initiations. She performs a snow-summoning ritual with candles, crystals, holly berries, and rainwater. When snow begins falling afterward, the line between coincidence and magic blurs. A disturbing migration occurs when Ellis takes Felicity alone to Alex's grave, cruelly forcing her to confront grief. Ellis's suggestion to dig up the empty coffin for closure reveals her increasingly erratic behavior. The night migrations culminate when Ellis convinces Felicity to help recreate Flora Greyfriar's murder. They kill a coyote with a borrowed rifle, and Ellis marks Felicity's face with its blood, foreshadowing more sinister violence. Felicity and Ellis's relationship transforms from attraction to romance to fatal obsession. They connect through intellectual interests, shared trauma, and darkness. For Felicity, Ellis echoes Alex, another brilliant figure who previously led her toward destruction. Their bond deepens during a prophetic tarot reading. Knight of Swords, Ellis's ambition, the Hermit, Felicity's self-discovery, and death, their relationship's transformation. This reading foreshadows their journey's tragic arc. When they become lovers during Thanksgiving break, Felicity describes their intimacy with literary intensity. When Ellis touches me, it's with the same slow, determined care I imagine she uses writing her books. It feels like she creates and unravels me simultaneously. This metaphor proves disturbingly literal. Ellis is crafting a narrative with Felicity at its center. The relationship turns toxic as Ellis manipulates Felicity, isolating her and exploiting her vulnerability. When Ellis confesses she came to Dalaroy specifically to write about Felicity after learning about Alex's death, their romance is exposed as predatory calculation. When Clara Kennedy vanishes during the autumn festival, Felicity finds her body arranged in the garden, a meticulous recreation of Flora Greyfriar's century-old murder, complete with wormwood leaves, hellebore flowers replacing the eyes, and peacefully folded hands. In Godwin House's library, Ellis confesses with disturbing calm how she orchestrated everything, from stealing the rifle to planting Felicity's fingerprints. Every moment of friendship had been calculated. During a thunderstorm, Felicity's suppressed memories surface. At Raven's Point, Alex had taunted her about her family's mental illness history. In rage, Felicity shoved Alex over the cliff edge into the dark water below. Felicity had buried Alex's body beneath Godwin House, revealing herself not as victim, but as both murderer and master of self-deception. The violence culminates on Godwin House's roof, where Felicity deliberately lures Ellis to the edge before delivering a calculated push. We are all capable of darkness when pushed to our limits. The most terrifying realization isn't that monsters exist, it's recognizing the monster within ourselves.